Did you know that if you owned or leased a diesel vehicle between 2009 and 2020, then you could be entitled to significant compensation? At My Diesel Claim, we're experts in handling these claims, and over a million drivers have already trusted us to represent them in their no-win, no-fee claims. It's completely free to sign up, and you can check your vehicle's eligibility instantly. Head to MyDieselClaim.com and join thousands of others starting their claims today.
Summer's here, and I'm not missing a second of it. So get ready for a one-take wonder. At BP, we've got barbecue grill meats at £3 for £12. That's our best ever burgers, delicious buffalo chicken burgers, Korean barbecue chicken kebabs, lamb shish kebabs, and posh dogs, coronation chicken, barbecue chicken. Now I really gotta go because the clock is ticking. Whew. Savor every second of summer with everything you need at your local BP M&S food store. BP, here for all of life's journeys. T&Cs apply. Subject to availability at participating BP M&S food stores only. For more details, see bp.co.uk/latest offers.
Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. My name is Christopher Harris and I am joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, we're back. It's been about 3 weeks since the last episode. I know I went on vacation for a week, went up into the mountains of Georgia, Blue Ridge Mountains, just to get away from things for a little bit. It's one of the few times of the year that I can actually go on vacation because the one thing about soccer, as you know and as our listeners know, it's nonstop. It's and this summer more than any, it seems like there's been no break at all.
Yeah, there's been no break whatsoever. I mean, it's funny. I went to Central Florida for 2 days, which is why we didn't do a podcast 2 weeks ago. And in those 2 days, I went to Central Florida. All sorts of things blew up. And in fact, my trip, which was just to, you know, hit natural areas, really got impacted by people calling me about USL and ProRel and Messi and all of the Women's World Cup was coming up. I mean, I thought I timed it so that it was before the Women's World Cup. But boy, this summer has been something else. I know we've had quote summers of soccer before, and that seems to be kind of a cliche or a marketing line, but I think your private line to me that this is a sea of soccer this summer, I think that describes it, because this has been an incredible couple of weeks. And then I've also been consumed by adult amateur soccer, which I know, and I have to say that it's the first post, like fully post COVID year. So all of a sudden there's an explosion of grassroots soccer, 7,000, 8,000 at these NPSL games, because people were, there wasn't full access to this stuff for many years, I guess. I mean, it's just kind of a reawakening in a way.
Yeah, the working title for this episode, which we'll probably not end up with, we'll probably use a different one, but the working title before we actually recorded is Lost in a Sea of Soccer. And I think in some ways, I mean, there's so much to choose from. I mean, like, so for example, myself as a Swansea City supporter, a team in the championship in England or in Wales, but not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, the season starts. And so basically we're recording this midweek. So in about 10 days from now, the second division or the EFL starts that same weekend. It's the Community Shield. It's just flown by, really, and it's lost in a sea of soccer. That part of the reason I mentioned that as a working title for this episode is that there almost needs to be a choice for a lot of us. So for myself included, probably you too, Kartik, maybe some of the listeners, but I think it's impossible this summer to watch everything, and it's almost a choice. Do you watch the Women's World Cup? Or do you watch everything else? And then everything else, there's so many different things going on, right? European friendlies, Leagues Cup, MLS games, Liga MX games, lower division soccer, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and it's tough. For me personally, the path I've gone down, the choice I've made, for the most part, has been down the path of watching Leagues Cup, watching some of the friendlies, and kind of random games, but I haven't watched much of the Women's World Cup other than the US team. What about you, Kartik?
Yeah, I've watched pieces or the entirety of every Women's World Cup match so far. So I've gone down a completely different path. I've watched a lot of NPSL and USL League 2. We've been covering that at Beyond the 90, and I'm this weekend going to one of the championship games in one of the regional leagues. As I said, a lot of people, well, I think a lot more than the last couple summers into that because it's the first post-COVID summer. I've watched a little bit of Leagues Cup. I've kept up with Leagues Cup. I have not watched a single minute of a single friendly involving a European club. So, I guess that's not a conscious choice, right? I mean, actually, I was pretty interested in the La Liga series and the Premier League series, whatever they're calling them, right? The ESPN La Liga thing and the NBC Premier League thing when the summer began, but they overlap with the Women's World Cup. We didn't know Messi Mania was going to hit the States, and I certainly knew that the adult amateur playoffs would be going on at the same time, but I didn't realize there was going to be so much interest in it, which kind of just forced me to cover it more than just in the kind of casual way I wanted to watch it. So, I mean, everything's hitting a boiling point, and you have to give MLS or actually Jorge Mas and Inter Miami credit, because I think Messi has lit a spark, and I think it's fueling interest in maybe not in the European club friendly, maybe the thing that's not benefiting directly from it, but everything else. I think there is kind of a soccer mania going on, even though, as we'll get into, the audience, as you kind of alluded to, is compartmentalized. And I have to say, like, there are a lot of people that are just watching the Women's World Cup and are not paying attention to anything else, or a lot of people just watching Leagues Cup and not paying attention to anything else, or, you know, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think it depends which bubble you're in. So you can be in the Women's World Cup bubble and watching those games, you mean staying up late or basically kind of staying up throughout the night or early morning hours watching those games or in some of these other bubbles. And it could be a Leagues Cup bubble with MLS games, or it could be the European games or other games too. The European games, the friendlies, it is interesting because you did do a poll, Kartik, on your Twitter account asking your followers what they were watching most of, and what were the results of those?
Yeah, so let me pull it up. It was only 50% Women's World Cup, which really kind of shocked me, because when I went into this, I thought it was still going to be 75 or 80%, right? And everything else is a little niche. But it was 51% Women's World Cup, 30% or 29% Leagues Cup, and then 12% lower division playoffs, which is the NPSL, USL League Two. Also, the USL Women's League had their final, and it was really kind of well covered and had a good attendance in Indianapolis this past weekend. And then last was only 9% was European club friendlies. But I think if we had taken this survey in 2019, the last time the Women's World Cup ran, I think the lower league playoff number would be about the same. It was 12%. It might have been like 10 or 11%. I think if we substituted MLS for a Leagues Cup for MLS, it would have been like 4%. And European club friendlies would have been much higher, and Women's World Cup would have been much higher. So and again, this is unscientific. It's just among my followers, Chris. I do think, and look, we call it like it is. There are a lot of people on here who say, oh, you have an anti-MLS agenda. You guys hate MLS. That's not the case at all. We're just very realistic and honest about numbers. And I am here to say, based on that and based on other anecdotal evidence, I think Leagues Cup has cut into significantly into people watching the Women's World Cup or focusing on European club friendlies in this country. Now, the question is this just a Messi effect, or is this Leagues Cup in general being a tournament that has captivated the audience? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, we can theorize it, but certainly it's having its effect.
Honestly, though, I think right now it's a little bit too soon to really analyze it in detail and come out with a kind of an answer saying, okay, this is exactly why Leagues Cup is getting so much publicity and why, say, Women's World Cup is not getting as much, et cetera, et cetera. But again, too, a lot of it depends on how you measure it. So, for example, with the Leagues Cup, I mean, it's all about Messi. I mean, in terms of Inter Miami, I mean, just incredible story. It's entertaining watching those games. I mean, that's really taking off big time, which is fantastic to see. Outside of that, I'm not really hearing much about the other games in Leagues Cup. I'm not hearing much about any fantastic games or, I mean, great attendances. it's still early, but the attendances for the Leagues Cup games are less than MLS games. But the TV ratings are decent, though. And it's early in Leagues Cup because we haven't had a lot of the Club America Chivas games. The teams that we have had outside of Inter Miami, which those numbers have been, 1.75 million for the debut against Cruz Azul for Messi and Inter Miami. But in terms of some of the other games on like NYCFC against Atlas was 780,000 on Unimas and Tuduene. It was Philadelphia Union against Tijuana was 461,000 people on Univision, et cetera, et cetera. So I think Leagues Cup is interesting. It is definitely generating interest. I think on the viewership side, I think it's more the Liga MX fans watching the games. However, the games that are on MLS Season Pass, we will never know those numbers. No one will ever know those numbers. The only people that will know those numbers are Apple and select executives within Major League Soccer, a very small list. And even the list of those people, they've had to sign NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, to agree to public to not leak any of that information. So I think Leagues Cup, I'm excited about Leagues Cup, but I'm excited about the Messi factor and Inter Miami and what they've done and what they, I mean, Messi and Busquets especially. So I'm interested in Leagues Cup, but if Messi and Busquets were not there, I think my interest would drop significantly. What about you, Kartik?
Well, quite frankly, I was going to say, quite frankly, you know, if Messi were there without Busquets, I don't think it would be the same because, again, a lot of people who know me know I have a fetish for central midfielders, and that's the position I kind of rate the highest. But I don't think you have the kind of fluid football and football that would suit Leo Messi's game if Busquets isn't there, quite frankly.
Right.
So that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and before we go into Miami a little bit more about and the Messi effect too, I mean, the European friendlies have been kind of almost like in your poll, a less of a priority for a lot of soccer fans. However, if you look at the numbers too, so you had Manchester United against Arsenal at MetLife, sellout crowd, 82,000 people. You had Wrexham playing against LA Galaxy, the B team, the second team. That was 34,000 people, so on and so forth. So you look at the attendances, many of them are sold-out stadiums. And the viewership, those are the ESPN numbers and ESPN2. We don't have those numbers right as of now, as of press time. But it's likely that those viewership for those games are actually probably greater than a lot of the Leagues Cup games. And the big mystery is MLS Season Pass, right? Is how many people are actually watching those games on MLS Season Pass. And because it's behind, basically because those numbers have been held secret, in some ways it makes it sound like it's actually much bigger than what it probably is, right? There's a lot of people excited about it from the Messi factor and Busquets factor. But because we don't know what those numbers are, it's hard to critique it. And I think a lot of people are probably thinking, probably in their minds, exaggerating what those numbers actually are, this viewership. Now we know the Univision number for that Cruz Azul Inter Miami game, that 1.75 million, which is great, fantastic. His debut, great number. And I'm sure a lot of English language viewers and listeners were probably watching that game too. But what is the MLS Season Pass number? We don't know. And it's almost impossible to even guess what that is. But what about that Inter Miami against Atlanta game that was on Tuesday night in the Leagues Cup, Kartik? What were your takeaways from that game?
Well, quite honestly, I had never watched Inter Miami before, except in their two U.S. Open Cup games against the team I support, Miami FC. I've never seen the team play before. So I may be the wrong audience, but I was very impressed. I thought there was good free-flowing football. Busquets, as you'd expect, just like he was at Barcelona, just like he was for the Spain team that I admittedly have overrated going into every major tournament recently. I picked them to win the World Cup. They were out in the round of 16, I think. I picked them to win the Euros. They lost in the semifinals. I picked them to win the World Cup in Spain. They were out in the round of 16. So Busquets is a player maybe I've overrated, but I love watching him even more than I like Messi, honestly. So I'm watching Inter Miami because I'm watching him in the center of the action. And the football is, you could see just a week or 2 weeks on the training ground with Tata Martino, these players are getting it. And it's not necessarily these high-level European players. It's the players that were at Inter Miami already, some local guys, American players, guys that have been journeymen, and then obviously DeAndre Yedlin, who was the captain until Messi got the armband in this match. Their game's being elevated by playing with Busquets and playing with Messi, and they will be playing with more high-end players, Alba, obviously, we know for sure, in the near future. So, yeah, it was very enjoyable. Atlanta, pretty poor defensively, I think. But, you know, this is what happens for those who haven't watched a lot of La Liga or watched a lot of Barcelona or the Spanish national team through the years, or even now the Spanish women's national team, same thing. And they've been spectacular in this Women's World Cup so far, maybe the best team. It's death by a thousand cuts, right? Chris, you and I are both keenly aware of how they play. And so you're seeing that even kind of the passing moves and the movement off the ball, it's really high level. And look, you can say things about MLS defenses. I saw that last night on Twitter and this morning on Twitter. We're recording this on Wednesday, the day after that game. But I think this would happen to defenses. I mean, I pointed out, I think in the Bundesliga, the defending is just as bad as we saw from Atlanta. So it's really good to watch. And the question is, and this is a big question, okay, because people are going to say this is condescending and maybe nasty on my part, but do enough fans of MLS and enough fans of American professional soccer, MLS, USL, and then all the, you know, all the lower divisions, do they quite have the same appreciation for that type of football that many people in Europe do, many people in South America do? I don't know the answer to that. I think they might. But maybe they don't. Maybe they don't see because this, there was even this case when Barcelona was at their high point, and even now with Manchester City, that there were a lot of people condescendingly say that's, you know, that's kind of boring. We don't want to see this boom, 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 these moves. Although the way Messi finished off, Messi was involved in all four goals last night. I mean, but the way he finished off two of those moves was just spectacular. But that's a big question. I mean, what is the audience's personal preferences in the U.S.? What is their sophistication level? Or maybe that is condescending to say sophistication. What is their personal preferences would be the way to look at it. Is this the kind of football they want? It's the kind of football I want, but I don't know about the audience in general.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I definitely think this is exactly what the audience wants. And I think they appreciate it and they see it. And just as one example, my dad, who's never been a soccer fan, and only in the last couple of years has he really started to warm up to watching more games, partly because of Wrexham, because he's from that area. That was his local team as a kid. So he's been following it a lot more closely. And then from spending time with him on Friday night watching the Cruz Azul game, and then Tuesday night watching the Atlanta United game with him, and I don't think I probably never watched a soccer game with him, to see his excitement and amazement at the skill level and what Messi was producing, and Busquets and Robert Taylor and Drake Callender, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I was like watching it going like, I was like stunned, like just watching, kind of just watching him in the same room and just how he reacted. It was really exciting. What I think, in terms of the question about sophistication, I think the part that is harder for a lot of soccer fans to get is the defensive side, is the difference between good defending and bad defending. And, you mean, to me, you mentioned that, yeah, Atlanta United were poor defensively, but we've seen in the Bundesliga and other leagues, you know, there's pretty poor defending. I'm looking at you, Borussia Dortmund, especially. But to me, though, Kartik, I mean, Atlanta United took it to a whole different level. I mean, it was like high school defending. I mean, in terms of the amount of space that they allowed the attackers, time on the ball, just really basic mistakes. And in that game against Cruz Azul, I thought Cruz Azul were unlucky not to win that game. They had like four or five really good chances early in the game. They had some other chances to score that they kept on missing. But Atlanta United was woeful. Even the penalty that Atlanta took was absolutely awful. I felt sorry for them. But to me, watching it as a fan, and I've watched most of Inter Miami's games over the last 4 years and have seen how bad they are, consistently awful, and then seeing how these two players, how much of a difference they make in this squad and how they link up together and how they're actually giving the opportunities for Joseph Martinez, Robert Taylor, giving them the service that they probably didn't get before, raising their games too by being on the same pitch. It's been a joy to watch. And to me right now, Amy, to me, Inter Miami, it's a must watch. I mean, seeing what happens next every single game. However, Kartik, what about the rest of MLS, right? Does MLS, are they missing out because people aren't paying attention to the rest of the league?
Potentially, right? I mean, I think that's possible, but I've never been an advocate for parity. This is part of the reason I so object to the MLS system, other than in addition to the fact that I don't like there being no free agency, no real free agency, that they're taking all this government taxpayer handouts to build stadiums and all of that. I have many reasons why I don't like MLS ideologically. One of them is the parity. I think they needed a super club. They had a super club the first several years of the league. DC United was really good. Yeah. People who just started watching MLS recently don't know that DC United team, I think you could have plopped into any league in Europe and they would have survived any top division. That's my opinion. I know a lot of people disagree with that. I think they were that good. And then 10 years later, you didn't have any MLS team at that same level because the salary cap kicked in. There were exemptions the first couple of years of MLS was in existence. And then all these teams got torn apart and the talent was spread around the league. I don't think that's good. I mean, I think it was great when we had the NASL operating, the NASL I worked for, the second NASL, and everybody had a dislike of the New York Cosmos, and they had a bullet on their back the whole time. I think it's terrible what's happened to the LA Galaxy in MLS. You need super clubs. You need big-time rivalries. You need this sort of stuff to make it meaningful. And if that means everybody hates Inter Miami the way they hated the Miami Heat in the NBA, because, I mean, I think there's also a bias against South Florida. Maybe this is me just being very parochial, but there seems to be a resentment. When players, high-level players, go to teams in New York and L.A., it's great. But when high-level players come to teams in South Florida, it's bad, right? LeBron signing for the Heat was terrible, people thought. Then bring it on. You know, I think it'll be great for MLS if everybody has a rivalry with Inter Miami and everybody's they've got a bullet on their back. Now, that having been said, it's really early for that, given where they are on the table. But if Alba's in, if the Luis Suarez rumors are correct, Sergio Ramos, although based on what I saw at PSG, he's not really at that level anymore. But he's a guy that I think is great from a character standpoint for the league, right? He's the kind of guy that gets people angry and gets people fired up. I think MLS needs those guys. They needed Ibra, and they were only able to keep him here for a year. They need guys like Chiellini. I'm glad he's in the league. So yeah, I think it's a really positive thing. Just real quickly on Atlanta's penalty. That's another theme of the last week, Chris. Anyone who's watched the Women's World Cup also, the kind of meek penalty taking we've been seeing, I'm beginning to think that I don't know if it's psychological or if it's the way the game has evolved or the rules, but it feels like more and more now in critical situations, keepers have an advantage on penalties. Penalties in a match, not penalty shootouts after matches when everyone's tired. Because it just seems so many either meekly taken penalties like that one or keepers guess right, as we're seeing in the Women's World Cup, and making saves. So that's a whole other thing that really has come to my mind in the sea of soccer in the last week is the anatomy of a penalty kick.
Yeah, to me, it's Messi and Busquets and Inter Miami is the best thing that could have happened to Major League Soccer, because now people are starting to pay attention. people are watching these games, people are going to the stadium. Before the Leagues Cup began, you could have gotten a ticket to these Leagues Cup games with Inter Miami face value for about $25. Now those tickets are anywhere from $140 to $200 on the low end and going up from there. But, I mean, yes, financially, this is a great move for Major League Soccer and for Inter Miami especially. But it does put MLS on the map. It does make people pay attention. There's even a story today that we have at worldsoccertalk.com where Pedri was talking about that, okay, once he's done with Barcelona, he's interested in moving to MLS. So it does open the door. I mean, it gives instant credibility. And however, going back to the question I had before, is no one's talking about these other teams in MLS. I mean, nobody's talking right now. Yes, FC Cincinnati is doing great. I mean, a great team. St. Louis is a great story. Austin's incredible stadium and a great atmosphere. But right now, nobody's talking about those other teams or any of the other teams, really. So for Inter Miami moving through to the round of 32 in the Leagues Cup, in the semifinals of the US Open Cup, has an opportunity to go all the way. There's opportunities for CONCACAF Champions League qualification, Club World Cup qualification. I mean, there's a lot of different things coming up, even the Copa Libertadores, or CONMEBOL and CONCACAF doing a joint competition. So there's more opportunities for Messi to play with Inter Miami outside of MLS in some really good competitions. But I just worry a little bit about the rest of MLS. Is this going to have an impact? Is this going to make people watch the other teams more? And I think it's the opposite. I think everyone's going to be so focused on watching the Inter Miami games that pretty soon, at some point, there's going to be some of the other teams or some of the other players on other teams or some of the other owners of these teams feeling left out, feeling that no one's really kind of as interested in them as they were before, unless they're playing Inter Miami. And then all of a sudden they're in the limelight. So that's my concern. Going back to the game on Tuesday night between Atlanta and Inter Miami, some of the positives, just to mention these. I think first and foremost is that more cameras. I mean, that's been a big addition to the Drive Pink Stadium in Fort Lauderdale. Adding more cameras really makes a big difference in terms of the quality of production. Kind of overhead cameras too. They've added a ton of cameras to make the production better. The atmosphere in the stadium is probably 1,000 times better than what it was before. The games are almost sold out, if not completely sold out, pretty close to it. And the entertainment value is off the charts. To me, like I mentioned before, it makes Inter Miami games a must watch. And last but not least, it automatically raises the bar, raises the interest in the Leagues Cup. Before Messi, yes, there was interest. You and I, Kartik, were really interested and hyped up for it. Now that takes it to the next level, especially with them moving through to the round of 32. Some of the negatives, we mentioned the defense, and I worry too about some of these other MLS defenses. Are they as bad as Atlanta United? Will they kind of think about tactically in terms of how they play against Inter Miami, maybe like actually marking Busquets and Messi and trying to prevent them from playing that way? Does that expose, some other players that now are, have more open space to attack? And does that expose the defensive woes there? And then last but not least, in terms of the negatives, it does bring in a lot of glory hunters. And we saw this, I'm not sure if you saw it, Kartik, but video of the game against Atlanta United from Inter Miami. And as soon as Messi gets substituted, you've got, thousands of people leaving the game. With about more than 10 minutes to go in the game, they're just drifting out of the stadium, exiting, because, yes, they're winning 4-0. The game's practically over. And parking and getting out of there, it's not that bad. It could be a lot worse. It's a small stadium, but a lot of people just leaving because Messi.
It's also a weeknight. It was also a weeknight, though, in fairness.
Right. Yeah. So what about you? Any other positives or negatives you took from watching that broadcast?
Yeah, I mean, I think this, you're right. This automatically raises interest in MLS. I think one of the things that I'm concerned about is you talk about MLS defenses. Now, I don't think it was good, and there'll be a bunch of Real Madrid fans maybe listening that are going to get very angry about this, but I don't think it was good for football at all when Jose Mourinho was at Real Madrid, and they basically have 10 field players, right? So you have 10 guys who can get a yellow card for fouling Messi. And we saw some really bad El Clasicos in that period. I think you would probably agree with me, Chris. Some really borderline unwatchable El Clasicos because Mourinho, in his cynical ways, set up a team to not just defend Messi, but to kind of hack him and foul him and really rough him up. And I'm fearful that you will have MLS managers who copy that. Now, to Atlanta's credit, they didn't. They gave us a spectacle. Maybe it wasn't good for them. But to their credit, they're not that cynical. But that's my concern when you talk about the MLS defenses, that maybe the Mourinho game plan. You also have to have incredibly disciplined, kind of smart midfielders and defenders to execute that plan that Mourinho had. I'm trying to remember the specific El Clasico one, but you probably remember it better than I do, Chris. There was one El Clasico that was just unwatchable because of this tactic by Mourinho.
And even off the pitch, too, after the game was over, was it Jose Mourinho was like grabbing the ear of one of the other coaches, assistant coaches? And it just was like basically the dark arts for 90 minutes plus more. It was really, really unwatchable. But let's get into the numbers a little bit, though, Kartik, because so for background, for those who don't know, with worldsoccertalk.com, our specialty really, our forte really, is a lot of it's the TV schedules, it's the TV information, the streaming details. Really, that's kind of our differentiator in regards to all the other sites out there. And yes, we have a ton of great soccer writers and soccer news, et cetera, and analysis. But the TV schedules is kind of really kind of where we stand out from the crowd. And on an average month, including the last 30 days, we have more than 1 million page views a month. So we can see instantly in terms of where the interest is for people watching games. I mean, are they kind of really going crazy over Leagues Cup, or are they watching Women's World Cup more? What are they searching for? What's the types of information they're looking for to watch these games? And for the most part, with MLS Season Pass, it's other than the first couple of weeks when there was a lot of interest, I think a lot of fans trying to seek out information, it plateaued for quite some time. Now, I will say that Inter Miami Atlanta game, partly because it was only available on MLS Season Pass, that was the only place you could see it, the interest level skyrocketed big time, big time. We got a ton of traffic for people searching for the information about MLS Season Pass and Leagues Cup and where to watch the game and kind of all the details that we had. And then earlier this week, or it might have been late last week, information released through Sports Business Journal, I think earlier this week actually, mentioning that MLS is close to having 1 million subscribers to MLS Season Pass. Kartik, when you heard that number and kind of read through some of the details, what were your initial thoughts on that?
I was upbeat when I saw the headline. And as I read through it, it became more kind of qualifiers than ever. Okay, so that includes season ticket holders. That includes T-Mobile subscribers that got the T-Mobile Tuesday free deal. That includes LG people who got that, redeemed that offer. And if you then assume the rest of the group, let's say of the 1,500,000 have paid, if you assume that they've paid $79 or $99, depending on their status with Apple, that's still a lot of money that's been lost on this package in year one. Now, this is all before Messi, right? Some of it's after we knew Messi was coming, before he actually took the pitch. So maybe that number skyrockets in the next month or two, and we have a better feel for it, and we feel better about it, I should say. But at this point, the million, if you don't probe into it, you think, oh, a million people, that's great. You know, ESPN, Fox, they never got 1 million people to watch MLS games on a regular basis. But, and again, that's 1 million for combined for every MLS team. But Yeah, financially, because of how much they paid, the outlay was, the price point, what it is, which is high for most people. We talked about that. They are still losing their, I don't want to say they're losing their shirt on this. It's not quite that bad, but they're still losing a lot of money at this point.
Yeah, I would
just
say
do the math.
Yeah, they're probably losing the shirt too, Kartik.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
And
yeah.
It makes for a great headline, right? It's like MLS and Apple nearing 1 million subscribers for MLS Season Pass. I mean, that's great news. And it really is good news. However, we're one of the few, if the only ones, that question things and say, okay, what does that really mean? And oftentimes, because we question things and analyze things, we get the abuse, like why are you being so negative? Why are you focusing on the details? Can't you just accept it and move on? Well, the reality is, no, we can't just accept it for what it is. That's part of our role as journalists, is to ask the questions and investigate. And you mentioned too, roughly 500,000 subscribers. I don't think paid subscribers. I don't think it's that big, because you look at the million, so they're nearing a million. So maybe they have 900,000 people, right, that have signed up. There's roughly 400 to 420,000 season ticket holders. Many of them have MLS Season Pass for free. T-Mobile, you mentioned. T-Mobile has, I believe, about 25 million customers. What portion of those signed up for MLS Season Pass that was given away for free? There's Metro PCS, there's LG, like you mentioned, in Mexico, because they couldn't find any TV partners willing to go ahead and broadcast Leagues Cup. They gave MLS Season Pass away for free for 1 month throughout Mexico. So that's a considerable number. On top of that, too, I mean, MLS has free trials, right? They have a 1 month free trial offered through the clubs. And they've got some other free trials going too. So the number of paid subscribers, we don't know what that number is. MLS does, a select few that have signed NDAs, and Apple knows. But it's nowhere near a million in terms of paid subscribers. And maybe that isn't so bad, because for the first year, they have to consider this a loss. They have to consider that this is a massive loss in terms of the money that they've spent to have the production studios, everything that goes into this. And then the hope is that once people subscribe, they got the free stuff, right? Next season, okay, now it's whatever price it is, $99 a season. Okay, is it worth signing up? And hopefully it will be. And then at that point, hopefully, in terms of making money off MLS Season Pass, it can happen at that point. The other thing to think about with this too, Kartik, is this is nearing a million subscribers worldwide. This is not just the United States. This is worldwide. So just to take that into consideration too, this is not just North America or the US. This is worldwide. So
yeah,
it's encouraging.
It's encouraging, but it's still, look, if you do the math, and let's say everybody paid for $99 for the subscription, not even $79, using your number of 400,000, which I think is actually more accurate than mine. I was trying to give Apple the benefit of the doubt here and say 500,000. It's about $40 million they would have recouped, which is well below what they paid. And yes, it's global, which also I think has to be the focus now because of Messi. I think they're more likely to sell packages abroad maybe than in the U.S. And honestly, I think perhaps Apple is less polarizing as a company. This isn't MLS's fault, other than maybe you could argue MLS should have found another media partner. But Apple is less polarizing maybe as a company. It's less offensive for people to sign up for an Apple product in other parts of the world than in parts of the U.S. There are people who are avoiding MLS because of who their partner is, which I think is really unfortunate. But I've been exposed to that, as we talked about on a previous podcast, that it's not something I understood until now, until the last few months.
Did you know that if you owned or leased a diesel vehicle between 2009 and 2020, then you could be entitled to significant compensation? At My Diesel Claim, we're experts in handling these claims. And over a million drivers have already trusted us to represent them in their no-win, no-fee claims. It's completely free to sign up, and you can check your vehicle's eligibility instantly. Head to mydieselclaim.com and join thousands of others starting their claims today.
I think the other part of this too is that MLS and Apple really need to pay attention to these exclusive games that are available on MLS Season Pass in terms of piracy. And we look at Atlanta United against Inter Miami. There were a lot of pirated streams out there, which I was surprised by because, okay, it's not available on television anywhere in the world. It's only available on Apple. There's no system in this world that is, that hasn't been pirated, right? So that's the fear. That's the concern for Major League Soccer and Apple is, can they police that? Can they make sure that, outside of the US, if it's in South America or if it's in Asia or wherever it is in this world, are they able to crack down and prevent illegal streaming and pirated streams? Because that directly really hits MLS hard. And actually, even for Messi, right? The last thing Messi wants, because he has this deal with Apple, is that he will get a percentage or a commission off all of the international signups outside of the US, I believe, for MLS Season Pass. He's going to take a cut of that. That's one of the reasons he joined MLS, is that he's probably thinking, okay, this is an opportunity for me to really take Apple TV and make it mainstream, make it popular outside of the US and blow up those numbers. And then he profits from that. But piracy, that is a huge concern. So that's something we'll be taking a closer look at worldsoccertalk.com. Kotick, let's move on to the mailbag and let's take a look and see what people are saying. First up is Robert, and Robert's got a couple of messages here. First of all, he says, watching the Inter-Miami game and the Messi and Robert Taylor link, a comment on the BBC by a Premier League reporter who pointed out that Robert Taylor came from the English Championship, so not much there. What Leo does is elevate the level of play for the whole team. What Taylor lacks in skill is made up with work rate. I expect Joseph Martinez to benefit from Messi's setups. Last night, his dummy for the Taylor goal showed good vision. With a couple more quality players, Inter Miami may be fun to watch. The Open Cup is possible. The MLS Cup is a really long shot. But like I've said, how much has Inter Miami bent or broken the rules? Yeah, and going back to what you said too, Kartik, about parity and how so many people for so many years, Alexi Lalas probably, the key spokesperson for the parity movement. it's just, having a power club like Inter Miami makes such a difference. And if you can get another team like that in MLS that's going to be a rival, maybe it's LAFC, maybe it's some other team in this league. Maybe it's FC Cincinnati or St. Louis or someone like that.
Nah, it's got to be a team in a big market. City. It's got to be LA. Yeah, it's got to be LA or New York.
No, LA.
Or Seattle. I mean, it's got to be someone like that. Well, I mean, if Chicago could get their act together, maybe it could be them.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I don't see it happening in New York and in LA. LAFC, ever since was it Club World Cup? They've kind of fallen off the cliff. No, CONCACAF Champions League. They've fallen off the cliff. LA Galaxy is not that good. I mean,
Philly. But it could always be Philadelphia because Philadelphia has. I'm very critical of MLS, as people know, but Philadelphia is one team in MLS I watch. And when I said I've never watched an Inter Miami game other than Open Cup against my team, Miami FC, which is a USL team, the last 4 years, I've never watched them until last night. I've watched Philly probably two or three dozen times because they are. Under Jim Curtin and with the setup that Ernie Stewart put in place there, they are a joy to watch. They are a team that has playing principles and has a DNA, and they're in a big city. So maybe it could be them. And they would be, I think, a good matchup in terms of kind of playing style for Inter Miami.
I could see them being the opposite, where it's more pragmatic and actually playing smarter, playing defensively, kind of a better shape. and actually being Inter Miami's kind of nemesis in terms of preventing them from scoring so many goals.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But knowing MLS, they're going to try to probably sign some players for LA again and one of the New York teams, probably NYCFC, and try to create something out of that. I just don't see it happening. All right. Robert continues. He says, now it's probably good that neither of you commented on the disaster called the MLS All-Star Game. Last year's format was the best. I do not like the All-Star Games. This year's shambolic effort was a setback. All the top Premier League teams are All-Star teams from the world over, and they have worked together. Throwing some good players onto the field after having a couple of days to mesh is a formula for chaos. I do not like the League's Cup, but there have been some good games. Was Messi's first game scripted? It was a perfect debut. Last weekend, 10-man Minnesota United had a big win. That was something. I do not follow Liga MX, so their opponent may be a bottom team. They looked slow and played poorly. So I guess the question is, are you both ignoring the competition? The League's Cup is being swamped by the people viewing the Women's World Cup as it should be. Some great football is happening. So All-Star Games, I've talked about this before. I have like zero interest in it and had a conversation with MLS maybe about 3 years ago. And they asked me, hey, Chris, like, what do you think about this MLS All-Star Game coming up? And I told them, I was like, I have zero interest. Like, to me, it is just kind of fabricated something that I have no interest in watching. It's something that's, you mean, to me, it's not meaningful. It's not relevant. You mean, it's completely unwatchable. And continue, for the most part, to not watch any All-Star Games. I'm sure you're on the same boat there, Kartik, I would imagine.
Yeah, although I will admit in 2006, which is now 17 years ago, I did travel to Chicago specifically to watch the MLS All-Star Game. So one time I kind of was into it, and they were playing Chelsea, who had just won the Premier League two successive years, and the MLS All-Stars actually won that game. D-Row goal. Dwayne De Rosario, one of the best players in MLS history, at least in my opinion. I know a lot of newbies may not know as much about him. But yeah, for the last 10 years or so, I haven't watched it. I haven't paid attention. I think Robert's point is well taken. They don't train together. They don't play together. Again, this is important. When that game took place in 2006, there were only 10 teams in MLS or 12 teams in MLS. So a lot of the players, there was a disproportionate number of DC United players on that All-Star team. So they had all kind of played together. Now you've got 29 teams. Damn, basically a player or team on the All-Star team. It's not, those teams are never going to do very well. I do think they keep it going because they have league meetings and other, in fact, I've a lot that happened at the league meetings have leaked out to me that happened last week when they were in DC. But I do think as we go forward in the League's Cup era, there's probably no need for it. Now you break up the season with the League's Cup in the middle, and you can do your league meetings at the League's Cup final, wherever it ends up being.
Yeah, I think the best word to describe the All-Star Game, in my opinion, is contrived. So before I move on to the next letter, I have to apologize. I think I made a mistake earlier in the podcast talking about Wrexham's game against LA Galaxy 2. Actually, it was Wrexham against Man United's academy. Was the one that had the 32,000 sellout crowd. So Patrick mentions Wrexham, which is what made me think of it. Patrick says, you guys are overestimating Wrexham way too much. Chapel Hill was filled with so many Chelsea kits and barely any Wrexham kits. Right now, Dignity Health Sports Park is empty. Also, you guys can get mad at me if you like, but I don't believe streaming is the way to go. Too many leagues and services to pay for, not to mention buffers all the time when the router isn't near you. And MLS Season Pass is a disaster. Buffers just all the time, no Android app, is absolutely maddening in this day and age. And I hope the Premier League stays on NBC Sports forever, so I don't have to watch my team on streaming. I will never pay for streaming. Only reason I have MLS Season Pass is because it was free from T-Mobile. I hope these companies continue to lose money over piracy until they make one package for all leagues and I'll happily pay. Cheers. So there's a few things there. It's there's never going to be one streaming service that offers everything. It's always going to be, it might go back to cable where you could get some of it, you mean like a streaming package that has some of the ones, maybe ESPN and Paramount Plus teaming up against with each other, or a buyout or something along those lines, or Comcast acquiring more streaming services and bundling Peacock with, I don't know, with Paramount Plus as an example. That those things might happen, but streaming is here. Streaming's not going away. If anything, cable is dying. I mean, and we've seen that from the numbers. But we will come to a time pretty soon where, just as we used to be so reliant on cable and it was just switch it on and it was there. I think in terms of technology improvements and enhancements, streaming will be that same way. You'll just switch on your TV and you won't even think that, okay, this is streaming versus cable. It's just, that's just the way it is.
And speaking of streaming, I have to say that I've been blown away by the Peacock picture during this Women's World Cup. Now, I did give Fox a shot. We can talk about that maybe on another podcast. I have an analysis of Fox's commentary and studio shows around the Women's World Cup. But the picture, so this is, I tend to kind of share some of Patrick's frustrations about streaming, and I wish this stuff was on cable. But with the Women's World Cup, what I found is when you have a top event, a huge event like that, and you've got all the camera angles, and you've got all of the technology that FIFA is doing, that the feed that comes over the stream is actually better and kind of purer really kind of a 4K stream on Peacock. And there are people telling me Fox Sports app is the same thing. If you compare Fox Sports app, streaming app to Fox on television, same thing, Peacock versus Telemundo, the streaming is better, just the quality of the picture.
Yeah, and we've seen that before too, with some TV networks will actually downgrade the signal, so the quality isn't as good. So they might say it's 4K, but if you look at it pretty closely, it doesn't look like 4K. Vice versa for other types of technology in terms of downgrading the actual quality so that it's passable, but not what it should be. While sometimes on streaming, like you said, with Peacock, I have to check that out with the Women's World Cup. And they have all the games in Spanish, but they've got every single game. The quality can be better.
Yeah, and they've got every game on demand too. So I don't know if they've kept the whole library from the World Cup, but the first few days of the World Cup, I stayed up. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw my agony in terms of my ability during the day to function, because I had stayed up all night to watch these games live. But the last couple nights, I've gone to bed at a normal time, woken up and caught up on all the streams on Peacock. And they're there, right? They're there several hours later and on demand. It's not like the Premier League where you have to wait 24 hours or whatever that rule is that they have for games that are on USA Network. They're showing them. They're there right away.
All right. We got a bunch more comments to go through, and it is hot as hell out there temperature wise. So we're going to speed through these a little bit just because, man, it's hot. We need to cool down with a beverage or something like that before we watch the game later today. Dave says, this is in regards to Wrexham's streaming package on iFollow to subscribe to that, so you can watch almost all the home and away games. Dave says, what do you see as the market of people who would pay roughly $200 per year? I assume most already have ESPN Plus for Wrexham games. I would guess that iFollow appeals overwhelmingly to fans with a pre-existing strong connection to a specific team. Does Wrexham have that outside of Wales? It is a very fun story, but as a neutral, I cannot imagine paying $200 for just one club. And then Tom, let me read Tom's here. Tom says, I just paid out a little under $300 for Aberdeen's Red TV streaming service. As you say, if you support that team, you do what you need to do, and I can watch every game which people in Scotland cannot. And I think that goes a long way to answering Dave's question. Definitely. For the most part, it is a pre-existing strong connection. But personally, too, I know from Swansea City's streaming service is that sometimes I get questions from listeners or readers asking about the service, and they might be a new fan, or they might be wanting to watch sometimes like one game or on a month, like on a monthly basis. And there are different options available. So the cheapest way to do it is to spend the $200 or the $300, and then it costs less per game. Or you can spend, I don't know, $10 for one game or $20 for the month, those types of price points. But yeah, in terms of trying to figure out how many people would actually be paying that $200 a year for the Wrexham games, it's hard to tell. But there is a lot of fans out there, Wrexham fans in the US, and we've seen that from the games against Man United and against Chelsea and against LA Galaxy 2, is there's a large amount of really, really diehard Wrexham fans that are American. So we'll have to wait and see how many of them sign up. But it is expensive. But for many of us, myself included, it's money well spent. Alrighty, up next is Ryan. Ryan says he wants to talk to us about the Women's World Cup. Ryan says, great job as always with the pod. In regards to the Women's World Cup, why has FIFA had such a hard time selling the rights, particularly in Europe? Seems like the product should be as marketable as ever. Kartik, any opinion?
Yeah, I think that they wanted a higher amount of money than the bidders were willing to bid. I agree. This World Cup in particular, I had a fear, and I guess maybe this goes back, same thing we experienced when the Euros went to 24 teams. I had a real fear that the World Cup expanding to 32 teams, the Women's World Cup expanding to 32 teams, was going to dilute the competition. If anything, it's made it, to me, the group stage has been much better than it was in 2019. I think what we have is it's easier to catch up in the women's game, right? It doesn't take as much in the way of resources. So you have nations who don't necessarily haven't had a great run of it recently in the men's game that maybe have put more money, relatively speaking, into the women's game. No one puts more money in the women's game than the men's game, but you know what I'm saying, just kind of relative. And what we have seen is an ultra-competitive World Cup where Europe, in particular, the nations from Europe have looked very good. Even the ones that haven't won games, like Ireland has lost both their matches, but they've looked good against Australia, and they looked very good against Canada for large portions of that match. Just not clinical enough either in either match. So the level of competition is much better. I've been really happy with CONCACAF, right? Haiti played, really gave England a game. They were unfortunate not to get a draw. Jamaica played very well against France, playing up to a higher level. Costa Rica gave Japan a decent test. You know, they were obviously overmatched in the end. But so it's more competitive. And I think next time the rights will go for probably more money. Also, I think for this tournament, Chris, unfortunately, the time zone thing is a problem. And FIFA, to their credit, has tried to schedule specific national teams in windows where they can be watched maybe in a less inconvenient time in their home markets. That's why you've had two U.S. games start in primetime U.S. time, which is an awkward time. It may be in Australia and New Zealand. And then the Canada-Ireland game was begun at a really awkward time in Australia in order to get it on television in Canada and Ireland at times that people could watch the game. So They've finagled it a little bit, and maybe that'll make the broadcasters happy. Also, one thing that I've been really impressed with is the attendances. Or maybe, I don't know the attendance numbers, but the crowds had added to that TV atmosphere at this Women's World Cup. I think the crowds have been much better than I expected. But, you know, Australia is a country, I think Australia and New Zealand are countries people want to visit. So you see a lot of people having made the trek to support their national teams. I do think the rights will go for more in 2027, just to summarize, to answer the question.
Yeah. And two things real fast is, one is I agree with you, Kartik, about the time zones. And when Ryan asks about Europe, why was Europe having such a hard time basically buying the rights to the Women's World Cup? I mean, it was really the actual timing in the games, right? When the game, I mean, actually, it's even better than it is in the US. But in the US, having games at 3 o'clock in the morning, or midnight, or early hours, basically, is not optimal by any means. And in Europe too, it's not prime time, so that definitely is a factor. But the second thing, which is the big thing, that probably definitely the bigger reason to me, is in Europe for the Women's World Cup, is that the Women's World Cup rights to actually broadcast those games were sold separately. So yes, women's soccer in general has grown by leaps and bounds, but in previous years it would have been bundled with the Men's World Cup together as a package, and FIFA going out to the European countries and selling it on its own in a time zone that was unfavorable for the European primetime markets in the summertime, right, when a lot of Europeans are on vacation. Those are the reasons that FIFA had a hard time trying to sell the rights to it. Next up is Dan. Dan wants to talk to us about promotion and relegation. Dan says, I'm a huge fan of Pro Rel and have always enjoyed the elevated drama that comes with it at the end of a season. As is often discussed, MLS itself seems like the biggest barrier to accomplishing this in the US. That being said, we have other challenges we need to overcome first. First would be the quality of some of the facilities in lower divisions. This is getting much, much better, but tuning into some Division 3 games can be jarring. The other thing is the overall expansion of the sport. There are so many markets in the US that really should have a pro team that do not. How would you introduce a well-funded team into the system in a way that makes sense? Some kind of play-in tournament? If I were to suggest the path forward, USL and NISA should work together to implement Pro Rel and ignore MLS. They could really elevate the quality of their leagues to a place that competes with MLS and ends up being a better product. Kartik, is he speaking to the choir there in terms of some of his thoughts and with yours?
Yeah. And Dan, USL will vote in 2 weeks as we record this. August 8th and 9th, they have league meetings in Colorado Springs. I'm reliably told The Athletic has reported that implementing Pro Rel is on the agenda. I'm reliably told that USL's president, Paul McDonough, who formerly worked for Inter Miami and Atlanta, two of the teams we spent a lot of time talking about today, MLS teams, is lobbying clubs to vote for it. And that I think that we're in a position now where MLS has moved into the lower division space. I just wrote an article about this at Beyond the 90 this week, which has got a ton of traffic, more traffic than anything in the history of the site, exponentially more than anything in the history of the site. And MLS, and Chris, you have talked about this for years. You've warned about this. MLS has moved into the lower division space with MLS Next Pro, and they moved into the youth space with MLS Next. And they're trying to consolidate the pyramid in kind of a closed league format. And so the real threat now is that you mentioned NISA working with USL. That would be ideal, in my opinion. And NISA is very much into open systems and open soccer, and apparently they're going to have an announcement later this week about that. We'll see what it entails. But my concern is that MLS is basically taking all of the or trying to tempt all of the really strong independent clubs in NISA to join MLS Next Pro, which will be a closed third, which is a closed third division. With all the MLS reserve teams also, and keep them out of any kind of ecosystem outside of MLS that might implement Pro Rel, which would be presumably an ecosystem led by USL. So MLS is aware of this, Dan, and as you said, they're an impediment. And not only are they an impediment, they're aggressively trying to move into the space to make sure it doesn't happen. And I don't know if as many people are aware of that as maybe should be, that MLS is becoming very aggressive in their efforts to build their own lower division infrastructure, which will be, of course, closed. It'll be a closed league.
Yeah, effectively, what they're trying to do is MLS is trying to own soccer in the US. I mean, at every level, it's really kind of control it completely. All right, just a few more comments to go, and we've got some really good ones here. Next up is NPOB1. He wants to talk about the US Open Cup. And he says, I'm so surprised that the US Open Cup does not have a documentary feel by whoever is the lead broadcast partner. Embed with a few smaller clubs and show that journey. You get that behind the scenes inner workings, which leads to interest from non-soccer fans. This is easy. And I think it's easy to do, but actually someone has to invest in that. Someone actually has to pay for it. I mean, technically the rights holder is Turner Sports. They acquired the rights to many of the US men's and women's team, and included in that was the US Open Cup. I'd imagine, Kartik, if they had a choice when they were bidding for the rights, and if they said, hey, we're going to sell the US men's and US women's rights separately, and then also sell US Open Cup separately, that they would not have bid on US Open Cup. So I think it's one of those things, it feels like they're stuck with it, and just by their actions, by sublicensing those games out to CBS Sports Network and the Golasa Network, who have been showing a lot of the coverage of the US Open Cup. So, but going back to NPOB1's point about having better production and having people tell the story of these teams and seeing the path through that this journey, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that would be wonderful. And that's actually a suggestion for me personally. Thank you for NPOB1, because I could probably help find the club at the lower division level, presuming they qualify for the US Open Cup. Although maybe cool to chronicle a club that has to go through the qualifying rounds. That's a whole nother aspect of this. But even if we were to skip that, just a club that has to start in the first round that's from an amateur league, it would be neat to chronicle. And this year we had Tulsa Athletic. They have a great president and chairman, by the way, who's been really influential in lower division soccer through the years. They made a great run in the tournament. There's one of those stories every year, and somebody needs to put the resources behind it and the idea to pick a club and just follow them through the tournament until they're eliminated.
The hard part, though, is which club is that club that's going to be the story to tell? Because how many teams compete in the US Open Cup from the beginnings?
It's close to 200, and you don't know which one it's going to be. That's absolutely right. I mean, the year Miami United down here made their run, and in their run, they knocked off several pro teams. I never would have guessed it. I thought they would be out in the first round, actually. I remember they played, in the first round they played another good local club that I thought was better than them, and I thought they'd be gone. And they ended up going four or five rounds of the tournament, finally losing to an MLS team. So you just never know who that club is. And I don't think it's the same thing if you pick a USL team, because these USL teams go deep, right? This year, Pittsburgh, Birmingham, right, et cetera. But that's just not the same thing, right? You have to pick an amateur team. You got to pick a small team or a third division team at the highest and follow them through the tournament. And pinpointing which one it's going to be, really, really difficult.
Yeah, and for that type of coverage too, like you mentioned, Kartik, beyond the 90... .substack.com is the place to go where you really kind of dive into a lot of those topics. Two more comments to go, both related. Chris says, I had a chat a few days ago with one of my friends who lives in Germany, and we were talking extensively about the pod you guys did a few weeks ago about the growing influence that Saudi Arabia is having on soccer. One of the major concerns he has about this is that the Saudis and other nationalities will start lobbying the DFB Bundesliga to get rid of the 50+1 rule so that they can start investing or buying German clubs. He is especially concerned about a club like his, which is Hamburg, being run by outsiders. With this concern in mind, my question to either of you is, do you see the DFB Bundesliga ever allowing foreign ownership or investment or abolishing the 50+1 rule?
I don't think they will. I think that there's so much hostility among German fans to it that it won't happen. Although there are ways around it in terms of sponsorship and getting revenue into clubs And obviously, there was so much backlash against Hoffenheim and Leipzig that I don't think the authorities would consider it. But I have to tell you, I mean, I think it's I'm a supporter of 50+1. I think it's really over the top. There's a history blogger that I follow. That's I follow him for historical stuff. He's kind of this centrist, kind of leans conservative guy that has takes on history, but likes soccer, and decided he was going to follow a Bundesliga club, and got like all of this mail from people in Germany, like, you better not support Hoffenheim. They're evil. They're this. They're that. And I just think it's same thing. What happened with Leipzig, right? I think it's over the top, and all the stuff I read in the from fans in Germany. Oh, there's an Austrian energy drink maker that's ruining our league. I just think it's way too much. But that's the reality. I don't think they would ever consider changing 50+1 because there would be such a backlash among the fans. Now, I do think there were doors open for Saudi minority investment or Saudi sponsorship in the Bundesliga, because I do think, Chris, if the Bundesliga's TV deal, domestic TV deal, is a little better than Spain, Italy's, and France's has been a complete mess. But at some point, the lack of foreign investment in the league is probably going to make it less attractive in some ways than Spain, Italy, and France.
That's a good point, though, because you said domestically the Bundesliga is doing better in Germany than La Liga is doing in Spain.
Well, in terms of the rights deal, I mean, I don't know if more people are watching, just the money from the
The money. Right. The reality is outside of that, so internationally, La Liga is doing much better in terms of rights deals, bringing in more money internationally than the Bundesliga. So something, if they want to compete, if they want to be bringing in the stars, trying to compete against La Liga, that needs to change there somewhere. And maybe it is sponsorships. But I'm with you, Kartik. I don't see them changing or getting rid of the 50+1 rule. To me, it's what makes German football different and special. It's their differentiator. And we've seen so many games the last few years with protests in the stadium with banners. And I mean, the German soccer fans are hardcore, traditional, all the way in, 100%. I mean, ethics, the whole thing.
And I just remembered, I had totally forgotten, Chris, Bayern backed out of its deal with Qatar Airways because of the backlash from fans. And Leon Goretzka, one of their stars, said, because of Qatar's policy towards gays, that he didn't want any part of it. And that created a backlash. So even a sponsorship like that, you can't do it in Germany. You can't get away with it.
All right. Last question last comment is from Ryan. Ryan says, with all of these sign-ins in Saudi Arabia and raising the profile of the league, it will mean nothing, in my opinion, if they are not able to land some type of TV deal in the US and other countries. I don't think the streaming service they are on now, which is Shahid, is a long-term solution for them to keep the league on. Considering it's $18 a month they want for a subscription and the lack of any advertisements they give to the league. I didn't know about that service until coming on worldsoccertalk.com. Do they provide English commentary? Should the Saudi Pro League try to find a good TV deal or get on a better known streaming service? I think if they don't have these signings, if they don't have it, these signings will mean nothing and the league will not grow. Thanks, guys. Yeah, Ryan, I agree with you that it's incredible the amount of players and how much they're getting paid, the exodus from Europe, these top stars going to Saudi Arabia. But if the vast majority of us cannot watch these games, how much meaning does that give the Saudi Pro League if people aren't really paying attention to it? Imagine if it was the Premier League, right? If it was the Premier League, if it didn't have easy accessibility to watch the games, would the Premier League be as popular as it is, even if it has the best stars? And the answer is no. You have to have a really good TV deal or streaming deal and make it as accessible as possible. And the Saudis have so much money, if they wanted to, Kartik, they could probably go ahead and just put everything on YouTube streaming for free and not worry about it, just have people watching it. They can afford to do it. But in terms of the marketing, it looks like they're way behind in terms of understanding the world of football. And maybe perhaps they don't care about the streaming. Maybe it's all about buying the best players and watching them locally and not caring about them, whether people around the world are actually watching those games. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know, because I thought they would have done something a little more proactive by now. I mean, they had a team in the final of the Club World Cup this year, so their league is not already was at a decent level, at least the top team was, before all these signings. Yeah, I wonder, because we know you can have the top players. La Liga had the top players, but they were stuck on VN. So just for this country, for example, La Liga had the best players in the world, but they were stuck on VN. Their teams were regularly winning the Champions League. English teams weren't. But yet the Premier League had much greater numbers and much greater reach in this country because they had a partner in NBC Sports, which dwarfed VN. Having the right media partner is critical, which, again, we beat this subject to death, but time will tell whether MLS has the right global media partner or not in terms of their growth. I don't know what the Saudis' end game is in terms of TV and streaming. I know what their end game is in terms of their local population. This is kind of bread and circus in a despotic kingdom that's trying to change its reputation. This is kind of bread and circus for the local population. And it's a football-mad country, unlike China. So they'll eat it up. That's why some of the comparisons with the Chinese Super League, I don't really buy. But it'll be really tough if we can't watch Benzema at all, if we can't watch Brozovic or all these guys, Ruben Neves. I can't even keep track anymore of the number of guys that have gone to Saudi Arabia this summer or have been linked with a move to Saudi Arabia, Mbappe being the latest that's linked. So hopefully we can watch these guys, or at least there's some sort of magazine program. Maybe they give the Paramount Plus in this country or ESPN Plus or whoever, that at least we can see the highlights with some context around these matches.
Yeah, I think the other thing about this too is that you can't just instantly expect fans, right? The fans of, I don't know, Al Hilal or whichever team it is in Saudi Arabia. It takes time, investment, years of work. And we've seen that from a lot of the teams from overseas come into the US every summer for the last, almost two decades plus, doing all the hard work, the marketing, the interviews, and all the TV coverage and everything they do to try to grow the club, the fan base, and it's not going to happen automatically. So I would like to see some of these games from the Saudi Pro League. I mean, and yes, if I want to, I can subscribe to that $18 a month service. But on top of everything else that I'm paying for, I'm not going to do that. I mean, so there needs to be, just like MLS Season Pass, offer it for free, get as many people in, and if it's good enough, they'll be hooked. And I think that's what comes down to it too, about Apple and your question, Kartik, about whether this is the right deal or not. It all comes down to if it's worth watching, it's worth paying for. And if it's not worth watching, it's not worth paying for. So the jury's still out on this in terms of whether or not Apple's deal with MLS is going to be a big hit or a big miss. And judging by Tuesday's numbers of the number of people coming to the website, thousands and thousands and thousands of people coming for more information about how to watch this game, it's taken off, definitely. It's getting bigger and better. All right, listeners, we have a very long episode this time. So thank you so much for listening and staying with us. It's been a break for 3 weeks, but we're back in action and we want to get your feedback also. Hence the reason that we had so much feedback this episode. We had 3 weeks worth stored up. But let us know what feedback you have for us or questions about anything we've talked about or anything else you'd like to ask us. There's a few different ways you can get in touch. You can go to the website, worldsoccertalk.com, and click on podcasts and then leave your comment in the most recent episode. You can go to the email and send us an email. That is web@worldsoccertalk.com.
Did you know that if you owned or leased a diesel vehicle between 2009 and 2020, then you could be entitled to significant compensation? At My Diesel Claim, we're experts in handling these claims, and over a million drivers have already trusted us to represent them in their no-win, no-fee claims. It's completely free to sign up, and you can check your vehicle's eligibility instantly. Head to MyDieselClaim.com and join thousands of others starting their claims today.
Talk.com. You can go to Facebook.com/WorldSoccerTalk. Send us a message through there. Twitter at WorldSoccerTalk. YouTube.com/WorldSoccerTalk. You can leave comments there on the videos there, which is usually audio versions of this podcast. And then I think that's about it. Oh, voicemail, 561-247-4625. Kartik, where can listeners who are interested in Beyond the 90 get more information and read that story about MLS Next Pro? And also, where can they find you on X? The new Twitter.
Gosh. Yeah. on X or Twitter, it's KKFLA737 and beyondthe90.substack.com. Lots of comments already on that article about MLS Next Pro. And it's kind of a sequel to the book I wrote for World Soccer Talk, Soccer Wars, bringing us up to date to where we are today, which is where MLS is moving aggressively into the lower division space. And basically, if you haven't checked it out yet, check it out. There might be a club in your area that's a lower division club that you support that you think is an independent, you think of as an independent club that might be playing in an MLS sanctioned MLS run league a year from now. So check it out and learn more about what's going on in the lower divisions as a result.
All right, we've got a ton of games to watch over the next week before we do the next podcast. But Kartik, what are you going to do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.